Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news. You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
President Trump speaking live to members of his cabinet at the White House. We wanted to spend some time listening to the president there about a range of issues and specifically what's happening with regard to a ceasefire in Israel. The beginning of his remarks were focused on Israel, and we moved to the shutdown. This is day nine, among other issues. We'll return to the room if he does turn things over to questions from reporters who are actually in the cabinet room today. I'm Joe Matthew in Washington. Thanks for being with us on Balance of Power, Thursday edition. Michelle Jamrisco is with me here in the nation's capital. So too is Tyler Kendall, our Washington correspondent. Tyler would typically be at the White House, but we're lucky to have her in studio today, having made her way back over to the bureau here. Not a lot of news here. In fact, there's still a lot of questions, Tyler, about the makeup of this ceasefire plan that has now apparently been accepted by Hamas and the start of implementation by Israel. Considering the questions we have, though, for the president to be preparing to get on Air Force One and fly there personally is pretty remarkable.
Definitely, Joe, including whether or not Hamas is going to disarm, whether or not this ceasefire will hold. There's still a lot of big questions going forward here when it comes to it. But it is clear that the White House really does want to show this forward progress. And I found it interesting that we just heard President Trump in these remarks during the cabinet meeting call out these regional partners, including Qatar and Egypt. We know that this administration has been really working closely with those regional partners. We saw it really highlighted during the UN General Assembly, for example, President Trump holding what turned out to be a very consequential meeting on the sidelines to get the backing of these other nations. I'd point out that back in May, we saw President Trump become the first sitting U.S. president to visit Qatar. And I think that is really one of the themes that we're going to see moving forward here. When it comes to some of these big questions about maintaining peace and stability in the region, how is the U.S. engaging more broadly, perhaps, with these other partners?
Well, Tyler, if this trip does come to fruition, we'll have the president abroad, perhaps even speaking to lawmakers on that side at the same time as this shutdown seems to have no end in sight. Did we hear anything from the president today or in the past 48 hours that you think will change that?
Well, at this point, our understanding is these negotiations, any sort of talks, they're all informal and they're happening perhaps on a bipartisan basis, but they're behind the scenes and they are not at this leadership level. We know that the pressure is mounting here, perhaps. Interesting to hear President Trump there say, we will be making permanent cuts due to the shutdown. That's one of the headlines that's crossing the Bloomberg terminal. We know that's part of this pressure campaign that's going to perhaps add fuel to the fire. The other is whether or not federal workers are going to get their back pay. I had the chance to ask President Trump directly yesterday whether or not members of the military are going to get paid, because Joe and Michelle, we are now less than 1 week away from that potential missed paycheck. That's October 15th. The president said he thinks military pay in particular will be resolved by then, but at this point, with no indication from leadership, it's unclear what that path forward is going to look like.
Well, as you were asking questions of the president yesterday at the Antifa roundtable, I was speaking with the Speaker of the House and brought up these very same issues, including back pay for federal workers who have been furloughed. This is suddenly up for debate, apparently, in Washington. The president and his OMB director, Russ Vought, began questioning the law on the books as to whether that guarantees back pay for furloughed workers. And it was part of my conversation here with the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. We're going to hear from Johnson and Hakeem Jeffries, who also spoke to Bloomberg today. Let's start with the Speaker.
There's different legal analyses that are floating around right now, and I've been so busy with this, I haven't had a chance to dig into it. I am a lawyer. I'm looking forward to reading through that because I kind of get into all the scholarship side of this. It has always been my understanding that the law requires furloughed workers to receive back pay, and of course that's been the tradition. And I'm not sure exactly what the president is referring to there. I haven't had a chance to talk to him about that specific issue yet, but we will. I can tell you this, though. The view of the White House, the view of the president himself, is that he doesn't want federal workers to be used as pawns here. We've got some great patriotic Americans who work for our agencies and provide essential services to the people. They should not suffer the harms of people who want to play political games. And I think this is a really important principle for us to advance.
Do you worry about mass layoffs coming as early as next week and that actually poisoning the well even more between Republicans and Democrats? What would be the impact of a move like that?
Well, look, I'm worried about all sorts of adverse effects because of how it affects the American people. We had some analysis today that every week that the Democrat shutdown continues, we could lose $15 billion in gross domestic product. I mean, it's a real hit for real people, and it has a reverberating effect. And if you keep it closed for a month, then one of the estimates I saw today is you lose 43,000 civilian employees, you know, because it has a ripple effect throughout the economy. We can't afford to do that right now. Things were going in the right direction, and this is a terrible setback for the country. It also has implications for national security. I mean, you look at things like nuclear deterrence. Those programs are stalled right now, right? And every day you do that, it has real-world consequences for us. Not a game, and we need to end it right now.
I know that you've said to House Republicans, at least reportedly, that you would give them 48 hours notice if they had to come back into town when folks left following the vote on the CR in the House. If they're talking next door in the Senate, if some sort of deal is brokered that might alter the CR as it stands now, do you plan to call your members back?
Look, the devil's in the details, but I don't know how they could possibly alter it. We made it so simple. There's nothing to take off of that. It is virtually identical to what Chuck Schumer himself championed in March of this year. And so we're not going to strap on extraneous policy issues and all of that that would take a long time because the government's now closed down. They need to pass the clean CR, turn the lights back on, and get everybody back to work. I'm just so frustrated with the nonsense around this. And I think more and more people at home are as well. I saw Rasmussen poll that came out a couple of hours ago, 49% of the American people were polled said the Democrats did this to give benefits to illegal aliens. They are not wrong. $200 billion in their counterproposal would pay illegal aliens the benefits that hard-earned, hard-working American taxpayers provide. We're not doing that. We're not going to add a trillion and a half new dollars to spending. We're not taking Chuck Schumer's ridiculous counterproposal. We're going to do the right thing for the people, and the Republicans are on the job to do it.
I know you had a couple of visitors at your office today, Mr. Speaker, a couple of Democratic senators, I believe Kelly and Gallego, had a lot of things to say about the swearing in of a new member of Congress from Arizona. I also saw Congressman Mike Lawler from New York get into an altercation with Hakeem Jeffries as he was coming out of his office here. I know that elbows can be sharp on Capitol Hill, but Mr. Speaker, what's happened to decorum? Is this a new low?
Look, I work on decorum around here all the time. Everybody knows that's my record. I started it when I came to Washington in January 2017. I authored the Honor and Civility Caucus Pledge and the Commitment to Civility. I mean, we have to maintain this. There are fights about policy, but it shouldn't be personal. I try to model that myself. I try to, you know, encourage colleagues to do it. But I would tell you the tension here is very high because it's high because the stakes are so high. And you got real Americans, real constituents back home who are really suffering because of the nonsense. And it gets us upset here sometimes. You know, I understand that emotion. We've got to keep it in check. We've got to get everybody working together. We've got to get the lights back on.
To get the lights back on, easier said than done here in Washington. The Speaker of the House talking with us here on Balance of Power. That was the late edition yesterday. Michelle Jamrisco, the talking points are pretty tight when you're dealing with any Republican lawmaker. And of course, he's providing a lot of them. So really crystallizing the arguments on the Republican side of things. You can sense the frustration. I spoke with Senator Mike Rounds last evening. You can sense disappointment. Everyone feels kind of deflated right now with no clear off-ramp.
Well, and you asked them about decorum, and you also asked them about a few perhaps windows of opening, room for negotiation on confirmation of lawmakers and on health care. And I think, there, you know, as a lawyer, Mike Johnson had a ready argument, as you say. He had all the talking points set up. He made his argument pretty articulately. But the one point where I thought I saw some daylight in your cracking his argument was when you asked him about the health care negotiations. Why not order up or pledge to have a vote on that and let this thing kind of play out? And he said he couldn't do that due to process. And that seems a little suspect, as you and I both know.
Yeah, he's the boss and he can do what he wants there. But obviously they're not going to budge on this, at least not yet. And when you listen to Hakeem Jeffries, you really get a sense of the distance between these two. When Mike Lawler showed up at Hakeem Jeffries' office yesterday, waving bills at him, and it turned into a screaming match. I mean,
fireworks.
To hear the minority leader tell him to shut your mouth was a pretty stark moment. And it was happening again while two Democratic senators were standing in front of the Speaker's office trying to do the same thing about the swearing in of Congresswoman-elect Grijalva over the Epstein files. This could get worse, by the way,
yeah,
in the days ahead.
Unfriendly terms right now, I think we can say, to say the least.
Yeah, let's hear from Jeffries. He was on Bloomberg Surveillance this morning, the Democratic leader in the House, with the other side of the story here on Bloomberg. Listen.
Our view, certainly in the House, is that we will evaluate in good faith any bipartisan proposal that is sent over to us from the Senate if it decisively addresses the Republican health care crisis with respect to the Affordable Care Act tax credits extensions or any other issues that may be put on the table because of the enormity of the attack on the health care of the American people that Republicans have waged this year. It's got to be meaningful. It's got to actually improve the lives of the American people. But unlike Republicans who have adopted this my way or the highway approach, we are actually willing to sit down and evaluate in good faith anything that could advance the ball here for working class Americans, middle class Americans, and everyday Americans.
Is there an opportunity for standalone legislation to make sure that the more than 1 million active duty service members get paid next week?
Certainly, our view in the House is that we should stand by our men and women in uniform and make sure that they do not miss a paycheck. Unfortunately, Speaker Johnson has ruled that out, saying it's not really an issue that he's prepared to deal with, in part because Republicans canceled votes last week, canceled votes this week. Apparently, they may not be coming back next week. And what is that all for? Why are they on vacation in the middle of a government shutdown, particularly as it relates to the real possibility that our military families might miss a paycheck that they cannot afford to miss? We're urging Republicans to get back into town. Allow us to deal with the military pay issue, allow us to deal with the Republican health care crisis, and allow us to reopen the government so we can enact a spending agreement that meets the needs of the American people.
Leader Jeffries, we also saw a pretty explosive argument between you and fellow New York Congressman Mike Lawler, and then you proceeded to call Lawler an embarrassment on television. Was this fight representative of the state tensions that are going on within the Republican Party in New York State right now?
Well, MAGA Mike Lawler is an irrelevant individual. He's a clout chaser, and he was stalking the Democratic leadership press conference in ways that are unhinged. And, you know, at the end of the day, our view is the people who need to sit down and have the conversation with us, Republican leadership in the House and in the Senate, the Trump administration, including the president or the vice president or anyone that they designate, are the ones who are ultimately going to determine how we can find a bipartisan path out of it. And we look forward to having those conversations. But unfortunately, Republicans to date have declined to do that.
Well, what was he doing that you deem unhinged? And have you spoken to him since? Have tensions cooled? It doesn't sound like they have.
He's an irrelevant individual, and as I indicated, his behavior clearly speaks for itself. Complete and total embarrassment, as a description, was a polite use of words.
Wow. Hakeem Jeffries coming off his encounter with Congressman Mike Lawler, of course, the Republican from New York. Great conversation, and thanks to Anne-Marie Hordern. That was from Bloomberg Surveillance earlier this morning.
Stay with us on Balance of Power. We'll have much more coming up after this.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
We're joined in the meantime by Laura Davison, our deputy bureau chief here in Washington. We might have to put pads on to continue covering this. Laura, what did you make of the day in Washington yesterday with these encounters taking place on Capitol Hill? It's like the stages of grief, and apparently we're in the anger stage.
We're in the anger stage, and also we're in the stunt stage. Remember, the House has been out. They have not actually had any votes. The Senate really also hasn't had that much work to do because we are still in the messaging phase of the shutdown. Mm-hmm. We're not anywhere near, it seems, the deal-making stage. So this is when you see lawmakers start behaving badly. They don't have enough work. It's a little bit like children. You need to make sure they're fully occupied to stay on track.
So, Laura, we've been talking a lot about the pressure points at this phase. We talked a lot about furloughs, worker back pay, especially the military pay deadline, flight delays. Is it Are any of these factors kind of growing in importance to these lawmakers who might still be swayed in one way or another?
The flight delays, that is the number one thing to watch. One, because that's when they're going to start to hear the outrage from their constituents. That affects, you know, everyone, no matter where your district is. You know, the worker pay issue, the federal worker pay issue, you know, that is also a massive issue. You know, you've got military bases and federal workers spread out across the country. You know, some more than 85% of federal workers aren't in Washington, D.C. So it's not just a, you know, local Maryland, Virginia issue. This is nationwide, but it still is, you know, only about, you know, 2 to 3 million people that are getting a paycheck from the federal government that aren't getting that paycheck as the shutdown persists. But the flight delays will be huge. There's also more niche areas, but that could have real effects for people. You know, the flood insurance program is essentially breaking down during the shutdown. We're not seeing economic data come out, which, you know, you think, oh, that's only important for, you know, economists and Wall Street. But this also affects the Social Security cost of living increase that they would calculate in this fall. That's very important for a lot of people, you know, who are on Social Security. They want to see what their increase is going to be for the coming year. So there's a lot of little details here that the longer this goes on, the longer this piles up, the more outrage hits. And we're at that point where lawmakers are kind of trying to figure out, you know, how long can we withhold before constituents are really mad.
What do we make of the debate here over back pay? This is what the White House got people talking about yesterday, that maybe there's not a guarantee, as we thought was codified by law, to give back pay to federal workers post-furlough. Speaker Johnson sounded a lot like Donald Trump there, having said they deserve back pay. When we asked him about it last evening, he said that there are different interpretations floating around there, and he hasn't quite read up on it yet. Is this about to change?
This is my interpretation of Johnson's comments there is that Republicans on the Hill are deeply uncomfortable with this idea that federal workers might not get paid. You know, those are their constituents. Trump, from his perch at the White House, is seeing this as much more of a, you know, here's a way to sort of, you know, put pressure on Democrats. This is something that Russ Vought, the White House budget director, has been very keen to do as a way to sort of really kind of hit Democrats where it hurts. But when you actually see lawmakers, they do not want to do this. And this is, you know, and much less, it probably is illegal. There's a law that Trump himself signed back in 2019. You know, of course, the Trump administration has not been afraid of, you know, testing these boundaries. You know, if they do it, it would almost certainly be litigated. So unclear, you know, exactly how that would play out. But this was one of the more far-fetched things that they could do.
Do you think we'll see any movement in the days ahead, especially as the president is headed off into the Middle East? He's made these threats of, you know, Democrat programs, as he just called them, in the cabinet meeting. He's also talked about potentially mass firings, you know, to the people that are not being taken care of, are not his people. Will we see any movement on that while he's out, you know, trying to achieve Middle East peace? Or do you think that's something that will be left for him when he returns?
This is a big question because, you know, the president has been quite distracted with, you know, with the Gaza deal, with a bunch of other issues that he hasn't really been, you know, fully plugged into all of the shutdown talks. What we've seen so far right now have been a bunch of threats. We've, you know, seen the president say multiple times he's going to fire mass workers. Earlier this week, he said in 4 or 5 days he'll make a decision. That deadline may end up falling when he's in the Middle East.
We heard that a couple times, right? Yeah.
And, you know, what we have started to see is Russ Vought calling to cancel certain funding for projects, transit projects in New York and Chicago, clean energy funding. So we could see more of that while the president is away. But some of these bigger, you know, very politically explosive announcements, it would be surprising, to say the least, to see that happen while the president is really rejoicing you know, in cutting this Middle East peace deal.
Right? What will be the conversation around the commander-in-chief leaving the nation to potentially speak before another country's legislative body in the middle of a government shutdown here?
This is certainly something that Democrats are going to use to really, you know, beat down on Trump.
Yeah.
You know, the Senate just made a decision, you know, a couple hours ago that they were going to stay in next week.
Is
they
that
had a
for
scheduled
sure?
recess. Yes.
Okay.
That is for sure confirmed. But, you know, I think that part of their calculus here is looking at what's going on with the Trump schedule. And if you have the House out, the Senate out, you know, and the president out of the country, you know, again, all, you know, levers of government that Republicans control, that's a really bad look when you have people, you know, especially, you know, on October 15th, when all the military pay, you know, all those military members are supposed to go without with pay, in addition to about 2 million other federal workers.
But going back to the messaging war, both sides still seem to be thinking that they're winning it. Is that true?
Yes. And the polling shows, you know, that the Republicans are still losing a little bit, but but you know, you look at poll by poll and this changes a lot. You know, what the real breakthrough that Democrats are really banking on this week was Marjorie Taylor Greene coming out and saying, hey, look, hey, Republicans, we need to focus on this ACA issue. You know, this is going to really hurt my kids, hurt people in my district. You know, so far she's, you know, one of a small choir of voices, but Democrats are banking that as these notices go out, people see the premium increases, that they'll be able to win this messaging war. You know, that's still a little bit of a risky gambit, but they're feeling good, as are, you know, you see more cracks forming on the Republican side. You have, you know, Trump undercutting the congressional leaders' messages. So there's a little bit more discord, at least right now this week.
Mm. If you're just joining us on Bloomberg Radio, it's Balance of Power. Live from Washington, we're going to kick things over shortly to Hollywood, where David Ellison, Paramount Skydance, is going to be sitting down with our own Lucas Shaw. That's only moments away here on Bloomberg. The fact that the Senate's going to be in next week, should that give us hope that there's maybe some progress being had, or that's just optics because nobody wants to leave town right now?
Right now, it's just optics. Okay. They don't want to leave. They will go home for the weekend. There's no scheduled talks. There's no scheduled plans. But if the mood does shift, if we see flight delays get really bad over the weekend, if we see other adverse effects start piling up, at least everyone's in the same room versus having to have another 2 days, you know, to get all the lawmakers back and in town. So that is a, you know, one hopeful sign that, you know, this could potentially, you know, wrap up next week. But I'm not placing any bets on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you look at ways, Laura, that maybe each side could maybe give just a little bit in this negotiation, where do you think the Republicans first would maybe give up something? Is it the pledge to hold a vote on the health care, you know, subsidies and the premiums, or is it something else that they might be willing to kind of throw the Democrats a bone to kind of end this thing?
Right now, the conversation to end this has to have some piece of the ACA subsidies as part of it. You know, that's been Democrats' main ask. They've basically peeled away. They came in with a long list of health care asks, you know, rolling back some of the Medicaid cuts in Trump's tax law. You know, that's not even talked about anymore. You know, everything is laser focused on the ACA subsidies. And whether that is, you know, that funding is included in the CR, that would be a major win for the Democrats, or a promise of a future vote, which is always a risky thing that happens in Washington. You know, a lot of votes have gotten passed because folks were promised something would come later that never did. So you're going to see Democrats being reticent to agree to that. But it depends, you know, kind of how strong the pledge is and how much they trust the other side. And that's really the big issue right now. If you just have leaders, between Schumer's and Jeffries and that just don't trust each other, don't trust their Republican counterparts in Thune and Johnson.
This is a new low for trust, it does feel like. And so when you start asking how we get out of this, that's when even lawmakers themselves start projecting a potential protracted shutdown, maybe another record. And I wonder what do we do with this November 21st date? If we keep ticking away the weeks here, don't they need to rewrite the CR? At some point, they'll pass this and it'll be a week long.
Yeah, and that's the thing that they're really, you know, watching carefully of, you know, do you, you know, if you pass it now, even you've already wasted 2 weeks.
We're already working on the next shutdown.
And they're not focused on the appropriations bills, which, you know, for the folks who are you know, the real budget nerds know that they have to get those, you know, those underlying long-term spending bills done. Work has essentially halted on that. You know, you have some moderates who are kind of talking about, you know, what could they do there, but that's really just a sideshow here. So this is going to be a really tricky issue. I'll note that in the last shutdown, the day that the CR was signed was also the day that there was ground stoppages at Philadelphia Airport, at Newark,
That's
at LaGuardia.
Right.
That was the thing that finally made folks say, okay, let's pass this. Let's get a deal. You know, we now suddenly have shut down the entire Eastern
Seaboard. Apparently that's coming based on what we're hearing, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.